This audio recording is presented by Jews for Judaism. We are dedicated to keeping Jews Jewish. www.jewsforjudaism.ca.
The story begins in a place called Lower Merion, Pennsylvania, which some of you may know. It's on the western suburbs of Pennsylvania, of Philadelphia. It's an upper middle class community with a large Jewish population. Really a place where when Jews were making it in society, they would move to Lower Merion. Great schools, wonderful neighborhood. Today it's known as one of the up and coming Orthodox areas. It was not when I was there. And I had a very stereotypical growing up. We were a very secular family, like many in the area. Synagogue was a three times a year affair, if that, except when there was what we called the bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah season. Then in about seventh grade, every week you're at shul because somebody else was having a celebration. And here's the part of the story which has actually changed in the last 5 years. And let me explain the change. Normally, I could give a story about how I did not have opportunity spiritually. I don't think that story is true. In looking at myself, the story that I want to tell is there was a lot of opportunities of which I did not avail myself of. Later, I found out that Philadelphia has a very vibrant Jewish community. Many Jewish educational institutions that were literally a phone call away, none of which I took advantage of. Where I was a very hyper-intellectual teenager who enjoyed reading a lot, enjoyed spiritual things, and was having a very bad experience at the local Hebrew school. Again, because I really look at myself not taking advantage of what was being offered. For me, synagogue was an experience one suffered through. The synagogue where we were had a very interesting architecture. It was honeycombed. If you looked up at the ceiling, there were little circles. And the goal was count how many circles there were. You would actually see people going, it's the most closely guarded secret. Because I figured when that number came up, it's kind of like in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Once you get the number, the meaning of the universe is now seen. But, in fact, even when I've gone back there a couple years ago and with the new rabbi, he would not give me that number. It's a closely guarded secret. But that's what I remember synagogue. It was not something of a great spiritual experience. The rabbi was inspiring. He was somebody who marched with Martin Luther King, and we'll talk about it. But I got the sense that there had to be something more to Judaism than the kind of upper middle class offerings that I was having. And I was searching, and the way I would search would be through books, reading about other spiritual traditions, getting very interested in what they had to offer. I also had another thing which was unusual for this area. We were a very conservative, small C area, but I happened to be politically fairly left-wing. I was always, I was reading about people suffering, and I said, there has to be something about, there has to be some way of changing it. And I've always had a feeling that we had an obligation, something which I knew was kind of tied to Jewish values, but I didn't know really what to do with it. So I spent my high school years doing a lot of reading. I did get involved with the Zionist youth group, Hashomer Hatzair, which had a very large following in Philadelphia. I had a great time. It was socially a great time. It was a lot of fun, but again, I was always felt the Jewish aspect, something was missing. And my only contact with more observant Jews were all negative. I remember very clearly one time we went on a field trip to an Orthodox synagogue, and I told the story earlier today, but it had a big impact on me, is that the shul was older people who were very hard of hearing. So what they thought was whisperings were really shouts. And they were like, oh, we got a bunch of goyim here, we got to make them into real Jews. Not very welcoming. Or when we went to a more ultra-Orthodox area, kind of having somebody being very obnoxious to us. These things had an impact, and so I figured, okay. I spent years trying to connect to what was being offered. I was too lazy, really, to do some real exploration, really pick up the phone, or at least explore. But I had certain things, but I figured I'll do a lot of reading. And I was reading about, especially what was fascinating was Eastern religions, because they seemed to have all sorts of neat spiritual things. You got to meditate. And I remember my friend and I were trying different meditations, and we were trying different music and see how that would help us meditate. It was kind of very amateurish stuff. It wasn't a serious exploration. In my last, 3 days into my last year of high school, I had a major life-changing event. Is that I had applied for early admittance at a program at the New School for Social Research, now called New School University, in Greenwich Village, and I got accepted. And the program said, basically, okay, your last year of high school will be your first year of college. So I found myself, within a week, going from really suburban Pennsylvania, gorgeous, one of the safest areas of Lower Merion, to a not a great section of New York City, and living there by myself. And that was a little disconcerting, to say the least. But talking with people, I figured this would be also a good place to kind of fulfill my spiritual explorations. There's a bookstore on Fifth Avenue called East West Books, great place to buy stuff. There were opportunities I could take courses in Zen Buddhism and actually get credit for it. And I had a chance. I mean, New York City is a great place to do spiritual searching because everything's there. An example I used later when I was a chaplain at Ground Zero and I was explaining one of the impacts of 9/11 is that 9/11 affected more spiritual communities than any other disaster in the history of the world, not because of the extent of the disaster, but because of where it happened, New York City. New York City is a vast melting pot of different spiritual traditions. It's really exciting. But I had several conclusions. One, really, I've already tried the Jewish thing, and I really wasn't that interested. I had my fill of Judaism. I said, okay, Orthodox were intolerant, and the other groups were just not offering what I wanted, and I really spent almost no time. Occasionally, I'll go to a service, but for Yom Kippur, out of more, you know, I figured Yom Kippur was a safety service. You know, it's the Day of Atonement, so if I did everything wrong, at least I'll do this one, and I'll make up, and then I can, it was kind of a, to back up the safe school when you apply. I feel I'll go to that service just in case. So a lot of what I spent in during my college years was political activism. And I noticed that a lot of the political activists, the ones who I really respected, came out of a religious basis. And somehow there was an appeal to me that if the concept of justice, and I did not know about the Jewish concept of what we call tzedek, but the concept of justice can be rooted in something beyond human beings, that there's something very powerful about it. And I also was very lonely, and I was also a lot of times would like to listen to religious radio stations or watch some of the religious shows, and I would always enjoy hearing, you know, if you believe, you can have your problem solved. Part of me knew it was not true, but the other part, it was emotionally, it sounded really good. So this was kind of the baggage I was bringing into my experiences in college. College was was absolutely fantastic. Had an apartment in Greenwich Village, had intellectual stimulation that was unbelievable, and it was very interesting. But I still felt very spiritually bereft. I had good friends who loved humanity, very progressive, but they all seemed miserable. And that bothered me. I said, look, you know, I did believe you should be happy. So these people seem miserable, and I said, there had to be something else. And I would be reading, and again, I read a lot of stuff, and again, I began reading about Christian social activists, the Sojourners group, the Liberation of Theologians down in Latin America, and I said, you know something? These people seem to have something. They have a belief in a God, which I struggle, for some reason, no matter what, I always believed in God. Even when I was going with my friends who are Marxist, you know, they would be shocked. I would be fasting Yom Kippur because I said, it's just something I do. But also, they had a firm belief in activism. So I spent a lot of time in then we had what's called the nuclear freeze movement. It was in the mid-80s. And something else happened, which really had a tremendous impact. I was, at the time, trying different things. I was trying a form of Buddhism. I was talking to Hare Krishnas about the chanting. And I very much believed in experiential, so I would go up to the ashram for Hare Krishnas, I would sit down with my friends who were chanting as Buddhists, and I would enjoy this spiritual thing, but two things actually bothered me, oddly enough. Number one is, in the back of my mind, a little teeny voice, and I think it was my grandfather's voice, said, "Craig, you're a Jew." I had no idea what the content of that voice was, but it just said, "You're a Jew." I said, "Okay, I'm a Jew." So I was always curious about, was this absolutely against Judaism? It always was, it would bother me for some reason. So it's number one. But number two is that in my political activism, again, I'd be very fascinated with the people who were able to, coming from religious motivation. And in 1985, Columbia University had a protest, a sit-in, an occupation of the front of a building. There was a period of what was called divestment, not what, unfortunately, incarnation, which is hit on Israel, but against South Africa. During the apartheid regime, there was a lot of movement to say that people should not invest in companies that are benefiting from the apartheid system in South Africa. And there was calls for what is called divestment, to bring the portfolio out. Columbia University had a very large sit-in of its students who basically occupied part of a building, and a lot of students from other universities came and joined them. And it was actually really fun because you're kind of sleeping outside and there's just a great community there. And a group of us from the New School would go, and we would take the subway up, the number one train, up the west side, go to Columbia University, and we would spend the night at Columbia, the day at Columbia, go downstairs, go back for classes, come back up, and there was a threat we were about to get arrested. And it was a real nice community. And there was a group there led by the Columbia Christian chaplain who was talking about base communities and the Christian view of justice. And I said, this is really something I like. And I also knew enough that I said, well, Christianity at least isn't far from Judaism. Because remember that little voice, hey, you're a Jew. Well, Christianity is kind of an area. And I even had read the Christian scriptures. And yeah, superficially, there's a lot of Jewish elements in it. So this was all kind of churning. And my last year in college, I was working in a bookstore, which was terrible because you got a discount, so you're like always buying books. I began working at a Barnes & Nobles, and all my friends would come in because they got a 30% discount and just give me a list of books to buy for them. Then I was working at another bookstore, and I met someone who was telling me about Jesus. And I said, okay. I talked to her about it. The person was not Jewish, Korean actually, and very nice. And I was thinking, okay, this is interesting. She believes in Jesus. And I said, fine. She invited me to her, what they called a house church. And so on Union Square, there was a group of very young people, artists, professionals, who were sitting singing about Jesus and talking about how much they could together. And I said, you know, this is really cool. I like this group. And oddly enough, intellectually, I knew enough about the history of Christianity to go through their doctrines and kind of undo the doctrines. But I had an emotional attachment. This group seemed really good. They were my age. They seemed to care about me. And I made a decision that, hey, you know, I want to stay with this group, and maybe this is a group I can work with and really kind of find my spiritual home. So I ended up going through baptism, which was done very publicly. I had a good friend of mine from school who came in, and it was a really great experience. So every Sunday I would go and worship at this church. It was a huge church. They met a place called Town Hall in Manhattan. There was 1,000 people singing and whatever, and friends of mine, we would live together, and I felt really good about it. It was an exciting place to be. It was a spiritually fulfilling place to be. But I noticed that the church began getting kind of weird, very authoritarian. Began telling you what to do and what not to do. And I'm like, wait a minute. And I knew enough about scriptures that I could out-argue them on scriptures. And I said, I realized that I know enough about cults, and this is something that seems very cultish to me. And I was feeling very, very uncomfortable. And a group of us ended up leaving this church and going to a sister church, which was not. And it was a very traumatic experience. We lost friends. I got technically excommunicated, which I thought was kind of neat. But it was kind of a very emotional experience. We felt very spiritually betrayed. So we went to another church en masse. We spent a lot of time talking about our experiences. And this was about around 1988, I was feeling very good. Again, very good, kind of very centered, This was a great community. I enjoyed coming. I enjoyed going to the church. But I said, you know something? I'm missing something. What am I missing? Again, that little voice. Yo, you're a Jew. So I said, oh, I'm a Jew. So obviously, since I knew that there were some Christian roots of Jewish roots of Christianity, I needed to figure out how did it work together. So I decided to, who do you think we were going to call in this case? Well, Jews for Jesus. Why not? That makes sense. What they know about how Jews and Christianity work together. So I put a call into Jews for Jesus, and I got an invitation to come to the Friday night services at the Jews for Jesus headquarters, and they called a congregation Kehillat Yeshua, Congregation Jesus. And it was really cool. To be honest, I really enjoyed it. It was spiritually uplifting, a lot of singing, a lot of fun. They gave slightly long sermons, but that was okay. And also I remember going to the Rosh Hashanah service, the Yom Kippur service. And I kind of split my time. And this is actually very common in part of the Hebrew Christian movement, is people kind of go to these Hebrew Christian places, but on Sunday you go and worship at another type of church. It's very, very common. And I felt very happy about this. I said, oh, good, I have best of both possible worlds. I'm very happy. And I felt kind of, again, in that equilibrium. And things were going to go on very nicely. My parents weren't thrilled about it, but I was raised to be accepting to all experiences. They raised me to be accepting, not to judge, and they were accepting and tried not to judge. So I found myself graduating from college, doing my first jobs, and really basically having a good time. I was in an innovative program teaching in the school system and doing some neat social justice stuff. I had a good group of friends, and I had a spiritual community that was incredibly nurturing and together, and I thought this was great. I was asked if I wanted to become a missionary, and I had a sense that this would be an organization I would not want to work for. Later on, I found that I was really right. But I was part of the community. I, you know, obviously knew something which made me slightly different. And it was interesting, the structure of the community. It was both Jews and non-Jews who were worshiping in a Jewish setting. And it was very easy to tell who was the non-Jews. How could you tell a non-Jew? They were the ones wearing the yarmulkes and having the tallis on. The Jews who grew up in this figured, nah. We wanted to get away from this, and I didn't feel I needed to dress the part. It was fine. So it was, and it was not a, and this is something, it was a very high-level group. In this group, there were several successful attorneys. There was a chief of rheumatology at a major New York hospital. There was an entrepreneur in the arms business who was a colonel in 3 or 4 different armies, and plus selling arms to them. I mean, it was a fairly high-level, successful, interesting group. United in a real love of Jesus and a belief that they were helping to recreate the first century church. In fact, the cornerstone of the Jews for Jesus building in New York says, Jews for Jesus founded AD 31, give or take some years. They wanted to recreate this phenomena of first century Christianity. Oh, do you want me to, I'm the photographer here, do you want me to do one of these? Sorry. They wanted to create first century Christianity, recreate something. Now, I knew enough history to realize that the theology here was a little bit ridiculous. Because what it was standard evangelical theology from the 15th century, from the 16th century Reformation period, with Jewish spice thrown in. The theology was pure and simple Christianity, but we used Jewish names. We just changed things. We sang Hinei Ma Tov. And we used certain Yiddish expressions. The music wasn't the old rugged cross. It was, you know, was other songs. It was Adon Olam, etc. But what happened was this disturbed me. In fact, and I'll tell you where the real problem came. Rosh Hashanah, there's a custom I'm sure most of you are familiar with, Tashlik, which is you go and, depending on symbolically, throw your sins into the water. Many people do it with breadcrumbs. Growing up as a good, non observant Jew, I had no idea what Tashlik was. And the Jews were Jesus' synagogue was said, we're going to do Tashlik. I said, oh, what's that? I said, this is a ceremony that's done by traditionally done by Jews. And we did it. It was a lot of fun. New York is conveniently has two rivers, so you can usually get to one of them. Now, I realized something that bothered me. I said, wait a minute. I'm sitting here knowing very little about Judaism, learning Judaism from people who are practicing Christians. And that bothered me. Really bothered me. And I wasn't sure what to do about it. Now, fate had a plan. Because I was living, remember, in Greenwich Village. I sold the apartment in Greenwich Village. Actually, what was interesting is that I moved in some friends with the Hare Krishna movement, and they kind of were cool about where I was. And I was walking up the 6th Avenue, and a gentleman in a black hat, young guy, came up to me and said, are you Jewish? And I said, yes. He goes, do you want to put on the tefillin? And I recognized, oh, this is probably Chabad guy. And sure enough, yes, there's a Winnebago parked there, and you walk in. Do they have these in Canada? Mitzvah mobile? Okay, great. It's ubiquitous. It's wonderful. So, and I figured, you know, hey, I'm Jewish. I can put on tefillin and make the guy happy. And so I put on tefillin, and there was a young person there who was introduced to me as Rabbi Shapiro. And I said, hi, how are you doing? And my name's Craig. Oh, by the way, I'd like to learn a little bit more about Judaism. Now, I figured, now when you tell that to Lubavitcher, that's like, oh, great. So about 5 hours later, I found myself at 770 Eastern Parkway, okay, one of the most famous addresses in Judaism. It's the World Lubavitch headquarters for the one or two people who may not know that. And I have a policy what I call openness. I sat down and I said, here's where I am holding. And here's why I want to learn from you. I want to learn to be a better Christian. I don't want to become a Jew. I don't want to practice Judaism. I want to learn a little bit more to keep this mush of Christianity and Judaism, try to make it have it more sense. And he looked at me and said, look, I'm not going to argue with you. We're just going to sit down and learn. We're going to learn a little bit about things that you may have never known before. I said, okay. That was a fair deal. Everyone was open. Everyone knew where each person was coming from. So I said, great. And it was New York has this incredible subway system. So it was just like very easy to get there. After work, on appointed days, I would go over 770 and we would learn. And I learned, first of all, a couple things that I didn't know before. One is, one of the phenomena on subways is you often see, you know, guys in black hats and beards with these big volumes open in front of them reading blocks of print. And I realized that they're actually reading something, like these words had actual meaning. And something called like Baba Metzia, the segment of something called the Talmud. I said, oh, this is interesting. Oh, this is what Talmud is. Okay. And I learned that there's commentators on the Torah that kind of explain what the Torah is about, that you just don't read the straight text, but you should actually, A, try to read it in the original. And B, there's a history of commentators, and there's this guy who sounded like a skin condition, Rashi, who was saying some interesting things about. I said, okay, this is unusual. I didn't get this. You know, I went through Bar Mitzvah, confirmation. I mean, no one ever told me about this. So this was interesting, but again, I was trying to kind of bring it all together. Okay, say, okay, this is, how can I be a better Hebrew Christian identity by at least learning a little? I know the Christian side. I got that part. I just needed the Jewish side to be up to speed. I also, they were teaching some Tanya, which is Chabad philosophy, which was over my head then, and it's quite frankly over my head now. But it sounded like there was a lot of thinking about this. This wasn't the dead religion of the law that can only condemn. This was something more interesting. And so this went on for a couple months. And I said, okay, I know now there's more to it, but I didn't know what to do with it because I was really happy where I was. I mean, why rock the boat? I mean, I finally found this kind of spiritual equilibrium. I mean, why rock the boat? So then another problem happened. One of my friends who was at the church, who was Jewish, we had a mutual friend, and he called me and he said, you're not going to believe what happened. I said, what? Elizabeth was gotten. I said, what do you mean? Well, these anti-missionaries from a group called Jews for Judaism got her. God, she's not a Christian anymore. I said, what? Yeah, this rabbi, she couldn't believe what this rabbi is telling her. So the rabbi was Rabbi Tuvia Singer, who was working at that time for Jews for Judaism, had the Teaneck branch. And I was rather incensed. And thinking of myself a rather intelligent person, I figured I need to call him and set him straight. Okay? So listen, arrogance has its benefits at times. I think God gets to use us plus our pluses and our minuses as one of the advantages of being God. You can kind of figure out how to use somebody's each side. So arrogance had its advantage. So I called him and I demanded a meeting with him. Now, I think for those of you who work in counter-missionary work, that's kind of like a dream call. Hi, I demand to see you to discuss Jesus. I think that's a dream call. We say, Michael, it's a good call to get. So he said, sure. Now, I just want to tell you a very quick, funny story because I'm a big believer in, and I think we all are, but it's nice to see occasion when God, the hand of God is really kind of in this. So I got an address in Teaneck. Now, even though now I live in Jersey, my understanding of Jersey is that it was a roadway between the state of Pennsylvania, where I lived, and New York. It was away from getting, it's what came between the two states. So I figured, and again, growing up in a town where a rabbi was a big deal, I figured it would be kind of easy to find this person. And what I did was I ended up leaving my directions in the office, but I figured I'll get on the New Jersey Transit, go to Teaneck. How big could the city of Teaneck be? And there can't be that many Jews in Teaneck. And everyone knows if there's a rabbi, of course everyone's going to know where the rabbi is. And also I didn't have enough money to get home. But I said, you know something? Worst comes to worst, I'll call information and get the number and call. Right, no big deal. An act of faith. So we drive around and we get to Teaneck. And I said, does anyone know where Rabbi Singer is? Everyone knew who Rabbi Singer was. But okay, I called 411. What a big deal. You know, call 411, get the call information, unlisted number. Now I'm saying, this is really bad. So I finally said, look, I'm trapped in Teaneck. I kind of remember a name of a street. Could you at least tell me the name of the street? And I finally, after a while, got the name. And working with Tuvia and others, Jews for Judaism, I began a very interesting process. And Tuvia said, you need to meet my friend Michael Skovak. You and him will get along really well. I said, well, where does Michael live? He lives in a place called Flatbush. I'm like, okay. I mean, again, if you live in Manhattan, Brooklyn is a foreign country. I mean, coming across Canada, okay, fine, it's technically a foreign country, but Brooklyn at that time was totally weird. So, again, the ground rules, everyone, what was great about it is that everyone knew the ground rules. Everyone knew where I was coming from. And the agreement kind of was, we're going to just show me Judaism. And I remember going to the Skobaks, and in fact, I usually jokingly refer to it as Yerushalayim, because you know there's a requirement on the three festivals to go to Yerushalayim. Well, each festival I managed to be at their house. Sukkot, Shavuot, and Pesach, I managed to be at their house. And I was studying with Rabbi Singer, and studying, talking with other people in Jews for Judaism. And it wasn't going very well. I was intellectually interested, but spiritually at times untouched. Here's the amazing moment. And this was kind of like, you know, one of Robert Frost's Two Paths Diverge in a Yellow, you know, that poem. And here are my two paths story. Very simple. I was getting kind of bored with evangelical Christianity at the time. I was kind of, because one thing I was realizing, there was no intellectually very vacuous. The people I was talking to was like, it wasn't really inspiring me. And I had friends who were Catholics who were kind of saying, maybe you should look into Catholicism and find. So there was a weekend, and it happened to be March of 1989, and there was two events I could go to. Event number one was a Catholic thing. Event number two was a Eshet Torah discovery. Okay, can't get path, can go either way. Now, I really actually wanted the Catholic thing sounded fun. I didn't want to sit around, you know, listening to lectures. But I get a call from the runner. A guy said, look, I'm sorry, we're totally full, and we can't have you at this event. So I ended up going to Great Neck, which is another town in Long Island, and what it was very interesting, which I later, because I became the rabbi of the synagogue that ran it, I'm now a colleague on the National Council of Young Israel Board of Rabbis, and he told me, he said, we weren't even going to have this. This was an experiment. We weren't even sure we were going to have this event. And I said, you know, Rabbi Lerner, I'm very glad you did. And I told him quickly the story of why. And so for the first time, all the groundwork I was doing with the staff of Jews for Judaism suddenly hit home, because I realized that, wait a minute, Judaism has depth to it that I did not know. Okay, that sounds obvious, but I wasn't aware of it. Judaism philosophically, intellectually, spiritually stands up to Christianity. There is community, there is happiness and spirituality and singing. I'm like, oh. And the Discovery Seminar, quite frankly, to use a really trite expression, blew my mind. I'm sitting here like, wow, this is a different way of viewing the world. And I had to come to the conclusion that what I most deeply held beliefs of the last couple of years were dead wrong. And it was not an easy thing to do, but it's something which I remember that moment when I just said, this isn't true, and that really the path I need to be on is the path of Judaism. I didn't quite know what the path entailed. I knew there were some, there was interesting things, there were synagogues you're supposed to go to, there were other things to do, but I didn't know what it entailed. But I knew that this is where I needed to go. And I remember that just, in fact, it's great, I have the Bencher, the prayer book from that Eshet Torah Discovery Seminar, so I know exactly the date when this happened. And it's an interesting area. So that was a culmination of people reaching out, making great sacrifices, and I came to that realization. I said, hey, this is where I need to be as a Jew. Now, that's a great place to end this story, but it's not really the end of the story. It's very easy, you know, that decision can be very difficult, but as we know from when we choose to lead a Jewish life, that's when the fun really begins. A movie where at the end the person becomes a Baal Tshuva and says, I'm going to learn Torah in Israel, and then the music goes on and you see the end. I think most of us will realize that's a really bad place to end it, because it never ends there. And part of the struggle that I had was figuring out where I'm going to be in Judaism. See, I knew there was a path of Torah, but I didn't know where I had to be. You see, I kind of needed a place. If I had gone to a regular Orthodox synagogue, I probably would have been not done very well there. I managed to end up at a Sephardic synagogue, a Moroccan synagogue in Manhattan, and I loved it. There's a joy there. There was a certain lack of seriousness, but intense spirituality, but not taking themselves too seriously. Also, I noticed that the people who were coming there were all over the spectrum. One person came in a black hat, and one person, and some of the Israelis came in putting keys on Shabbat morning, you know, putting their car keys in their pocket. And there's something about it, is there was no judgment. And the Rabbi Raphael Ben Shmuel, who was a Moroccan Chabadnik, which is, I think, very unusual, loved it, and he talked about the spirituality of Judaism. And it was great. It was a great place to be. And this is something very important, because it's not a common place to end up, but for me it was exactly where I needed to be. And it was a place where there was just great love of Judaism and great feeling inside. And that was really important for me, because I needed to have that emotional area. The intellectual stuff was also available. I could sit down and talk to Rabbi Ben Shmuel. I could talk with others. And I could learn, but I also needed to have that readjustment. And I also want to tell a very important part of it. When one becomes a Baal Tshuva and begins trying to become Shomer Shabbat, you can run into certain problems. Big one is work. They hired you to work 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. Well, in the winter months, that's a little bit difficult to do. And I happened to be incredibly lucked out. I was working at the time for a New York State Assembly member. Assembly is our equivalent of the provincial you have your provincial parliament. In New York, it's called the Assembly. It's a lower house of the state government. And the Assembly member happened to be the only WASP in the state assembly. He's actually in the social register. But when I told him what was happening, he looked at me and said, look, you know something? This is important to you. And he would be the one to be kicking me out. He would say, Craig, you're turning into pumpkin. Get out of here. On Friday afternoons, I would be kicked out of my office. And it was wonderful. And that was the type of support. I had people who were willing to be supportive, because if it became, at that moment, being Shabbat in my job, I probably, honestly, would probably pick the job, because I didn't understand the import of it. And that was really important, have people to have those ideas. And the story actually gets better because I ended up meeting my wife, whose sister was involved in a Hebrew Christian group. And we ended up getting together, talking. My wife and I got married, and when my parents kind of saw that a wife was coming with this, which meant there could be grandchildren, that eased a lot of the issues. And ended up with three kids right now, all wonderful. I always wanted to be a religious person. I thought I'd be a minister or something. I liked the idea of being in a position to talk about spiritual things. And I had another great one of those fork in the road experiences. 1996, I was offered a really decent job as a public relations person at a hospital in Brooklyn. I said, that was nice. At the same time, a friend of mine who's always doing interesting things said, Craig, you know, a rabbi in Passaic is having a smicha program. If you want to learn with him, you can go for rabbinic ordination. I'm like, ooh. But it means I couldn't take the other job. So I went for the big bucks and went for the rabbinate. And I don't think I've ever made up the income loss. I mean, I've kept, but who cares? It's been an incredible, that itself was incredible, sitting down learning. And again, the full-time ability to immerse yourself in Torah. And this is something I tell often when I see students, I even tell my children. I said, you don't know how lucky you are. You know, to be able to be in a situation where you can learn, where that's what your school experience is. And when I see Bachrim from the yeshivas in Passaic, there's a yeshiva gedola, but I know people from Lakewood and the Mir and Tells, etc. And often, if they seem a little bored, I said, you have to understand how lucky you are. You're one of the chosen. Jews all over the world, all over history, would have wanted to be in your position. It's amazingly amazing position. It's my area, the only regret I have in my life. I said, if I ever came back again, you know, if I ever Gilgal, which I later found out is actually part of Judaism. So if Hashem says, look, Craig, bad news, like, you know, we need to send you back again, but you get to come back with what you want, I would, you know, either come back Chabad Shliach or Eish HaTorah or somebody learning. I mean, those are the things which I really have an envy for those who are able to be in that position. But it's not the position I'm in. My position, I realized, is being able to be a teacher, somebody who's been able to take my experiences and really love of working with all types of Jews. In the last couple of years, I've been involved in the New York Board of Rabbis, which is a rabbinical organization and really one of the only ones in the world that has an active Orthodox membership, Reform, Conservative, Reconstructionist. And we get to talk together, and it's important for me to be able to work in that type of environment. Also, I have had the experience last 2 years of teaching rabbinical students from different areas. And the reason why I bring this up is that we in the Jewish community look at each other and say, oh, how divided we are. We're so divided. Well, if you look at our history, and that's my next course I'm teaching, is Jews in Antiquity, we're actually doing pretty well. If you read Josephus, you realize that in the time of Antiquity, it was much worse. We were actually much more unified. And we need to find ways of bringing together. I have my strong beliefs, but there is this idea of Klal Yisrael. And that's why I love working with Jews for Judaism, because it's about Klal Yisrael. It's about us as Jews. It's about us coming from all over the place. And what I've seen in the last couple of days in Toronto was great examples. I mean, last night, two things happened. One, which has never happened to me before, is I gave a talk and they said, please, can you give another? That was like, whoa, that was like unbelievable. And number two is just to see the one group of Jews loving the other and just coming and knowing that there was nothing promised here, just Jews coming together. That's amazing. So seeing this is very important. And I work right now at the Jewish Community Relations Council. I have been able to use my experiences. I was a chaplain at Ground Zero, and I've developed a communal spiritual care project working with a whole group of rabbis and non-Jews. My Pesach table, in fact, last Pesach we had a minister, a priest, and a rabbi. And of course, is this the beginning of a joke? I mean, we were there, and because I can appreciate where people spiritually are coming from. When I work with evangelicals, I don't have the caricatures of them. I know where they're coming from. I know where they're serious. I know where the problems can be. And it gives me an ability to relate. When people talk about spiritual experiences, I can relate to where they're coming from. I know where it can be dangerous, but it gives us at least a calming starting point. My relations with the Muslim community in New York are generally very good because we know how we can talk about prayer and things like that and then get to the serious issues. My relationships with the other communities are very good also because I know where they're coming from. But I know it because I was asked this morning on the Zelda Young show, well, who is Craig Miller? That was a great question. And the answer was very simply, Craig Miller is somebody who realizes he has a long way to go, but he knows how to get there. And that's important, is that I've learned, and again, within Judaism, every so often a new aspect of Judaism. 2 years ago, I read one of the most books that absolutely blew my mind, called Climbing Jacob's Ladder, which is about one man's going to Far Rockaway to learn about the Jewish practice of Mussar, which is a way of self-improvement. I didn't know this was an aspect of Judaism. This is incredible. And I had a chance to meet Alan Marinus, the author, and I connected with somebody who's now my rabbi in Israel, who has translated the works of Rabbi Yisrael Salant. And I've been able to have the privilege of working with them. That's amazing. That's a privilege to be able to take a piece of Jewish learning that many don't know about, that when they say, hey, this is part of Judaism, is this some New Age thing? I said, no, this is in the mainstream of Judaism. And it's so exciting to be able to work with those people to say, hey, this is who you are. And the thing about I learned it is that this morning I talked on, or this afternoon, on winning the battle for the Jewish soul. And yes, every generation we are in a fight for the Jewish soul. Fight for Jewish identity. But the answer to the strategy of battling is a slogan that, this one I happen to invent it, but is being used, is Judaism is a religion for Jews. I'm making no comment about anything else, but as a Jew, we have Judaism, we have Torah. I know it works because I've lived through the experience. And I know it works because I've talked to others who have gone through different experiences. And as Jews, that's what keeps us together. And as we together can learn, ask the questions, work in our traditions, the richness. Remember, according to the Midrash, God looked in the Torah to create the world. The Torah contains everything that we need in this world. And it's a very amazing ability of how that works. But often helping people find their place in it. It says that every Jew has a letter in the Torah, but helping each other find our letter in the Torah. And that's it, and that's why my experience is, yes, the search was meaningful. Do I regret anything I did? No, because it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. Whether I regret it, I don't regret it. It's what happened. What I do is, in fact, I always say Judaism is never about guilt, it's about opportunity. I've had these experiences, and I have the opportunity to do this with these experiences.
Jews for Judaism hopes that you have found this audio recording to be helpful and informative. Jews for Judaism is an international organization dedicated to countering the multi-million-dollar efforts of Christian missionary groups that target Jews, the impact of destructive cults and Eastern religions, and the growing rate of intermarriage that is devastating the Jewish community. Jews for Judaism achieves its goals through one-on-one counseling services and educational programs and materials that connect Jewish people to the spiritual depth, beauty, and wisdom of Judaism. Please contact Jews for Judaism if we can help you. www.jewsforjudaism.ca. Keeping Jews Jewish.